Welcome to the VMI Leader Journey. I'm your host, Major Catherine Roy, Communications and Marketing Manager at the Center for Leadership and Ethics. This podcast features conversations with VMI cadets, faculty, alumni, and VIP guests who come to post. Our conversations highlight leadership best practices, lessons learned, and practical insights. In this episode, we'll hear from Riley Schultz, VMI Class of 2024. Schultz is involved in two clubs sponsored by the Center, the Cadets Superintendent's Advisory Board, an Experiential Leadership and Problem Solving Club, and the Intercollegiate Ethics and Debate Team. Schultz said he came to VMI for a more profound college experience and to be involved in something beyond the routine. Whether you're a current student, an alum, or simply interested in learning more about the incredible work being done by our student leaders, this podcast is for you. We think you'll enjoy learning Riley Schultz's perspectives on this installment of the VMI Leader Journey. Let's get into today's episode.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate the opportunity. Like you said, my name is Riley Schultz. I am a senior at VMI, class of 24, and I'm from O'Fallon, Illinois, which is near St. Louis. I'm an international studies major, and I also take part in Ethics and Debate Club at VMI. I'm the CIC of the club, and then I am also the CIC of the Cadet Superintendent Advisory Board. And then in addition to that, on the Hill, I am Battalion S1. So I work with accountability and administrative stuff with Commandant staff.
And just for our audience's sake, what is a CIC?
So that means cadet in charge. So it's kind of like a club president equivalent.
And for CSAB, what are some of your duties and responsibilities?
So a lot of that has to do with coordinating with Colonel Gray and Dr. Tucker about the mission of the group, as well as what we're moving towards in our agenda, coordinating with the other officers about setting the agenda, as well as moving the debate along in terms of the CSAB goal of the year.
And then how do you determine, you're talking about getting to what is identifying a goal, is that right?
Mm-hmm. So usually the way it works is you kind of work with the diverse interests and backgrounds of everyone in the Cadet Superintendent Advisory Board based on what issues they see in the core, and then we narrow it down to a singular issue that we'd like to work to solve, and then we collect data on it and then work to solve the issue. So over the break, we're going to be finalizing a survey that's going to be sent out to the core in the early part of next semester, and then we're going to be working on finding a solution. And our overall problem statement has to do with esprit de corps and pride in being in VMI and pride in your unit.
And those themes or goals might change from year to year. Mm-hmm. How long have you been on part of the CSAB?
This is my second year on CSAB. So last year we worked with the goals of non-commissioning cadets and how much they were getting out of the non-commissioning lab. And what we found was that cadets weren't really getting much out of the non-commissioning required lab. It was just more of a filler requirement they weren't getting much out of. And they could actually get more out of, you know, having more free time to, you know, look for jobs and do job research. So we worked to get that requirement modified last year.
And what was the modification?
So seniors no longer have to take that non-com lab. It's still required for second classmen in a sense, because it does provide a lot of really good advice and guidance in terms of making resume, applying for jobs, applying for grad school. So it's necessary for that first year, but they found that they don't really need 2 years of it.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay. Well, very good. And how did you all come about selecting that as a problem? Well, and let me back up for a second. What is the mission of CSAB?
I think the mission of CSAB is to find leaders within the Corps that aren't necessarily the ones with the chevrons or the ones that are the class officers, but it's people that are greatly invested in the Corps from a diversity of backgrounds and can come together with that diversity of backgrounds to present ideas and issues that they see that can make positive change at the Institute.
So it's basically a group that's a problem-solving group that enhances core life.
Exactly.
In some aspect.
Exactly, exactly.
And then how does one become a member of CSAB?
So applications open up every year kind of towards the last few weeks of school. So there's kind of a a survey sent out with some questions based on, you know, what they
does
do at the institute. Yes, it does. And it's available to all rising third classmen, second classmen, first classmen. And then there's the interview process as well. And then we have about, I think, 20 members, like a 20 member cap or 20 member availability. And it's not, you know, set at 20. But we do the rising CSAB officers. So it's, so this year was me, the rising vice president, the rising secretary, operations officer, and then the assistant to the cadet in charge.
So you guys, all the officers are intimately involved in screening the applicants to come in, and then you all do face-to-face interviews, or how does that work?
Yes, ma'am. So we screened all of the applicants through their applications based on the answers they're putting, the depth that they're putting into their answers and the thought they're putting into their answers. And the ones that we really wanted to interview with, we interviewed.
Good. And are those in person or on Teams?
We did those in person in the library.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
And what about succession planning? Do you guys identify some of the cadets who might be good officers?
So last year we did elections for CSAB officers. So I put my name on the ballot for, I think, all the officer positions. And then I got...
One of these is going to stick, right?
I was hoping one of them would stick. I surprisingly got elected. Well, I guess it was a surprise to me, but I got elected as president, cadet in charge. And then from that point, kind of planned how we wanted the year to go and how we wanted to do interviews, and then we just kind of hit the ground running.
And then how has this year gone? Because you completed last year's task, you've got the non-commissioning lab no longer a requirement for seniors as a second year, basically. How's it been going this year in finding a topic?
So we have two meetings with the superintendent. One is in the first semester and one is in the second semester. So,
and to clarify, the meeting is actually an executive briefing.
Yes, ma'am.
So this is high level stuff. Mm-hmm. You can add, you know, you're basically adding some skills on your resume.
Yes, ma'am. So we had a meeting with the superintendent, the dean, and the commandant. I think it was earlier October, which is earlier than we usually have that first meeting with the superintendent. And that's briefing on what our problem statement is. And the superintendent gave us some really good feedback from how to move on from there. And the commandant and the dean also gave some very good feedback from there. And so from that point, we've been working with that feedback as well as guidance from Colonel Gray and Dr. Tucker. And we even invited Sergeant Major Sowers and Chaplain Casper to come and give some of their feedback too. So we've been working with that feedback, and we just now completed a draft of a survey to send out to the Corps for the next semester.
Oh, cool. When you started the semester, were there some ideas already formulated, or how did you come about? How many did you present several ideas to the superintendent?
Yeah,
so one you were really wanting to do.
So the way it starts out, the first or second meeting, we actually have three different categories on the board. We have regimental system, academic system, and I think cadet life systems. And everyone just puts down sticky notes of problems that they see in these different categories. At least 50 problems up there, and we just kind of all, okay, so maybe this isn't a problem to everyone, or this is more of a perception. Okay, this is something that we can look at. This is something that's a problem, but maybe we can't fix. And then we kind of narrow it down to what we can look at and what we can fix. So I think we kind of started out with, ownership of decisions in the Corps, and we kind of narrowed it down to, you know, pride in the esprit de corps.
So have you been able to use any particular strategies or decision-making tools in order to do some of this work?
Well, if you know Colonel Gray, you know he loves decision-making tools and strategies. You know, he's got one for him. it's funny because he'll brief them to me. He's like, does that make sense? And it makes sense, but it makes more sense when he just writes it out on the board. his methods have actually really helped. We did one the other day that had to do with whether it was a perception or a reality, and whether it was a VMI core problem or a VMI systems problem. We graphed them into quadrants, and it really helped us situate our issues into different categories, and we moved on from there. So that was an example of a really good one that we did. So very thankful to Colonel Gray and Dr. Tucker for the guidance they've given us. They've really helped us like move forward in certain places that kind of seemed like we were stuck.
So when you all did your brief in the fall to the administrative leaders of the Institute, what was their feedback in terms of the research you had done and the ideas that you had? What was that about?
So I think their feedback was focused more on, issues that could be more supported by data. So that's why we're doing our survey here, because to their other point, it is fair that it can be perceived as feelings when you do bring forward a conceptual based presentation. So we're trying to focus a little bit more on data that we're collecting from the core now, and more tangible issues such as esprit de corps rather than ownership.
Mm-hmm. And when you say esprit de corps, can you define that?
I think it's pride in going to VMI, and then in the subsects of that, pride in being in your unit, being in your company, your battalion. So I think one of the main issues, and there's multiple, but for instance, shining your shoes and being proud in your uniform, not because you might get boned, or not because you're going to get penalized, but because you're proud of it. You're proud to be a cadet.
So I'm a mom of three kids, and so I always tell them, put your best foot forward. If you're going to do something, do it well, do it thoroughly.
Mm-hmm. Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm. I've always kind of said that, your uniform appearance is a reflection of the effort that you put into yourself. So, mm-hmm. When you step outside of barracks, and the way you look is the way people perceive you, and a lot of times perceptions are reality. As much as that is a hard truth to accept, a lot of times the way people perceive you is the reality that they make of you.
Are you trying to make that good first impression, mm-hmm. and then if you always look like you're ready for the day?
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's also the fact too, we wear, VMI on our hat brass, and we wear VMI on our belts, and we wear the VMI ring. So our appearance isn't just a reflection of us, it's a reflection of the Institute.
So you did your briefing in the fall, you've done your research, now you're getting ready to do your survey in the spring. And what's the timeline on that?
Mm-hmm. So we have our survey, we're going to send that out to the Corps in probably the spring, and then we're going to analyze those results, then do problem solving, so then make a brief to the superintendent on a tangible solution that we can make. So that brief will most likely be April. I don't believe that the exact date is set in stone yet, but it is going to be in April, early April. Mm-hmm. So from there, we're going to brief him and then get his feedback and a yes or no, or a modified yes or no to the solution that we're making.
Some of the reasons that you came to VMI, mm-hmm. one of them being that you wanted a deeper college experience and having pride in something greater than yourself. How has being a member of CSAB contributed, or has it contributed? Has that satisfied that desire that you had from something different?
Well, yeah, going back first to my motivation to VMI, I was not a part of a military family or anything like that. It was really on my radar in high school. It really kind of came like senior year that I really wanted to go to VMI, just more because I wanted to be a part of something greater than myself. I saw my sister go to regular college, and like she talked about, the dumb stuff that goes on at regular college. And I was like, I really don't want any part of that, to be honest. So I went to VMI, not just because I wanted to go to college. I wanted to get something more out of college than just an education or, fake friends. I wanted real relationships and bonds that would last a long time. Going back to, have I seen that in CSAB? Definitely, because the other thing I really respect the most about CSAB is that it's not that there's no one group that's overrepresented in CSAB. Everybody comes from a different aspect, a different specialty, a different motivation at VMI. We have rankers, non-rankers, athletes, non-athletes, really just every make and mold of people at VMI, and all of them come together and say, this is something I see that maybe you don't see, and this is something, hey, maybe everybody sees. And I think that's really beneficial, that people that a lot of times are not seen as, maybe running in the same groups can come together and make those positive solutions.
And so when they say when a group comes together, there's the norming and storming and then forming phases. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did you see that with the new group of cadets that came mm-hmm. in?
Yes, and one of the things is that, you have people have things that their minds are set, this is a problem, we need to fix it, and we should go through all the measures to fix it. And a lot of times you have to realize that maybe what you see as a problem is really not that big of a problem to other people, and more importantly, sometimes the superintendent won't see that as big of a problem. When we present these solutions to the superintendent, you have to realize that, if he's going to agree with your solution, he has to agree that it is to a problem. So,
and a solvable one.
And yes, a solvable one too. So also some of the things people bring up is, they'll bring up an issue that we see, and we have to many times say, well, is that something that we can really solve? Some of that stuff has to do with stuff that's even higher than Smith Hall. It's right. Stuff that we can't really fix.
Right. And then you're also a member of the Ethics Club.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Talk about, you know, how long you've been a member there, what's your role on that. And...
So I started third class year as a sophomore. I was motivated to join by one of my S1 sergeants at the time, Harris Burton. She later became a lieutenant, and she's kind of really motivated me throughout my way. She's always been a mentor to me. So I joined that, and then second class year, Harris became the cadet in charge, and I was the assistant cadet in charge. And we had a really successful year. We were the first team in VMI history to go to the Nationals for the Ethics Bowl. And then in April, we were the we defeated all the service academies at the Military Ethics Case Competition in Annapolis, Maryland. And we didn't just win, we got a perfect score by one of the judges. So we were really successful last year. We had a really powerhouse team. And now I'm the cadet in charge of the team, and we're gearing up for the Military Ethics Case Competition in April.
And that's a big one.
That is our Super Bowl. Yeah.
Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
How's it been that now that you're in charge, and are you still in touch with cadet? Well, she's a graduate, Nan Burton.
Yes, I'm still in touch with her. You know, we text and talk every now and then. She's in law school now, so I've been texting her about, you know, law school stuff because I'm applying. Yeah, so I do give her updates and stuff every now and then. And I have asked her for advice before on stuff. You know, I think that's part of the thing about leadership is humility. You know, you never know all the answers, and if you do think you know all the answers, then you should probably rethink your mindset.
And who's the ACIC?
The assistant cadet in charge is Riley Malone. So we are the team of Riley and Riley. And trust me, we make sure to make that their joke to all the judges. he's a great guy. He's really stepped up. He knows a lot about ethical frameworks, and he brings a lot to the table. So he's a second classman.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you look to him to maybe take the reins for next year?
I certainly hope he does. Yeah.
Are you planning on going to law school? Or are you planning?
Yes, ma'am. I've applied and been accepted to a few law schools. Nice. Right now, I'm leaning towards going to University of Nebraska. I haven't made any formal commitment yet, but I think that's the one I'm leaning towards.
You also mentioned that you're an S1
lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what is that role like?
So I've been on S1 since I was a corporal when I was a third classman.
S1.
So S1 deals with accountability, administrative duties, and the guard team at VMI. So my specialty is kind of accountability, and I help out with the other stuff too. A little bit in terms of the administrative stuff. So I'd say S1 is the one that has the most breadth of duties, and we have to know a lot of stuff about what we're doing. And we deal with just day-to-day accountability, and a lot of times we get tasks from the commandant's office that kind of are different and unique in their own ways, and we have to kind of figure out how to solve those.
Tell me, like, what would be an instance where you would have some face-to-face interaction with the cadet within your duties?
So when we do out processes of RATs, we have to make sure we get all the signatures that are required, their company tag. The commandant usually wants to meet with them too before they leave. Also with accountability day to day, we want to make sure all the accountability procedures are followed. So that, you know, for instance, right after Thanksgiving break, me and the S1 captain were in the commandant's suite office with different members of comm staff, making sure that every company had their accountability submitted after Thanksgiving break to make sure all the cadets were accounted for.
Mm-hmm. And then what kind of leadership skills would you say that helps you with?
I would say it definitely teaches you professionalism at an age where a lot of people are not learning professionalism. So, and that's not across the board, but I would say that I've learned how to deal with, you know, different tasks and different unexpected things in the plan. And I've also learned how to work with people that have a lot of experience, and I learned a lot from that.
How about peer leadership?
Yeah, I've learned about, and it's great that I've been on S1 since I was a corporal, because I learned a lot about what it means to, you know, be a part of that team. So as a corporal, I didn't really have anyone to lead, but I learned a lot about followership. And then, you know, as a sergeant, that's when I had corporals below me. And I think the biggest thing I learned from that year is that a good leader treats the people below them as family, and, you know, make sure that, you know, they can always be someone that they look up to and someone that they can go to. And as a sergeant, I think that's the best year to learn that, because you still have people mentoring you. You know, I had Harris Burton still mentoring me, and Ainsley Fritter at the time that were mentoring me. And then I also had, you know, all my corporals at the time that were looking up to me. So I learned about that from, like, both sides of it. Mm-hmm. And now that I'm an officer, I kind of have learned how to, you know, not have to ask as many questions, but, you know, I still do have those questions, and, you know, but also making myself, you know, someone that always is there for people below me and advocating for the people below me.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying about the asking questions, do you use the different, we call them the rainbow books of regulations and things like that? Like how much familiarization do you have to do?
I mean, it's not a crazy amount of familiarization. And if there is questions, there's usually somebody who knows the answer. I think, like I said earlier, a big part of leadership is the humility to accept and be okay with the fact that you don't have all the answers, but that someone else might. And sometimes that person is someone lower than you on the chain of command. So I've asked, you know, my sergeants questions before about something I didn't have the answer to, but they might have just because of what they were doing with their duties that day.
Mm-hmm. Now you talked a little bit about your teams being kind of like family. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think, as a corporal, I just learned about like how my sergeants would always, you know, make sure that, you know, we were doing okay, and that we were making sure that we all felt welcome and supported. One thing I've learned at VMI is that your dyke should not be the last bit of mentorship that you have. So, you know, your dyke will always be the greatest mentorship that you have, but it shouldn't be the last mentorship that you have. So after your dyke leaves, find other people to mentor you, and mentor other people that whose dykes have graduated. So, you know, when I was a corporal, you know, my dyke wasn't here anymore, but I think my sergeants kind of, you know, made sure that, you know, as thirds, who obviously didn't know everything yet and knew a lot less than everything, that, you know, we were taken care of, and we like were always supported. And I even had that as a sergeant with my officers looking after me. So I'd say that mentorship is always available to you at VMI. Mm-hmm. And that as you get up in classes at VMI, as you become a second classman and a first classman, always look to mentor people and always look to provide, you know, guidance to people, because they don't always have the answers, and also accept the fact that you don't always have all the answers.
Yeah. We talked a little bit about, you know, what is your, you've had Lead 344 mm-hmm. in organizations, and have you thought about or put together what your leadership style is?
I would say I try to be a servant leader. I would say I always try to help people that are, you know, working for me in the way that I can. And, you know, sometimes that doesn't have to always be like just, you know, helping people out for their job. That can be, you know, hey, let's have a meeting and I'll get you guys donuts or something like that. You know what I mean? So I think I always try to make that family environment too. And also just, you know, being honest with yourself, you know, a lot of times that has to do with, do I really know what I'm talking about? And if I don't know what I'm talking about, maybe I should, you know, ask this person, you know.
Defer.
Yes.
Or be quiet.
Yep.
When we're talking about the family environment here, mm-hmm. would it be fair to say that what you're talking about is checking in on people, having mm-hmm. empathy for people?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that motivates them. I think motivation is the biggest benefit of that. So I think seeing that at, you know, across all the levels, right? So with my sergeants, you know, like making sure that they're like doing okay with the new leadership responsibilities that they have this year as sergeants, and making sure that, you know, that they're doing well with that. And I'm really proud of them because they're stepping up and being the next leaders of the Corps. And, you know, I've seen them grow as corporals. I'm immensely proud of them. And, you know, seeing my corporals grow up and take up the new responsibilities and, you know, fighting their way through third class here, you know, I'm proud of them for that. And I always want to make sure that they know that, you know, I'm looking out for them. I'm proud of them for what they've done. And, you know, last week with my rat, I would say I'm most proud of all, because, you know, he's my pride and joy. You know, I'm immensely proud of my rat, and I couldn't have asked for a better rat. And I always check in with him on the daily, you know, how was your day, how are your grades doing, and stuff like that. And, you know, really his smile is contagious. So, you know, seeing, and so really just to see that reflected, and seeing how people prosper just because, you know, you check in on people sometimes, it really makes a difference in my day.
That's great. That sounds a little counter to how some people, or even we, have described the cadet experience here at VMI. We call it an adversarial environment, mainly because there's so many challenges. You know, you're separating from your family, you're going away to school, so every school has that. But mm-hmm. here, then you've got to be a part of the rat line, mm-hmm. and then you've got a challenge for your time versus academics versus military duty. And we talked a little bit about your thoughts on whether or not VMI really was an adversarial system. Can you share your thoughts on that?
Well, it's certainly adversarial in that it presents you challenges that you wouldn't see at any other college in the United States. And it presents you hardships that make you a better person at the end of the day and help you have resiliency that I know I certainly would not have if I went to a regular college. Now, I would like to expand on the fact that it's adversarial and that it's not always to beat you down, it's to build you up. It's to give you perseverance, but it's also to make you a stronger person that can look out for not just yourself, but for others. I think it teaches you how to not blame the world for your own problems. I think before I came to VMI, you know, I had this concept of like, if something bad happened, it wasn't my fault, you know, like this happened, whatever. And I think VMI teaches you to say, yep, this was my fault. And that doesn't mean that, you know, it was a failure in the negative sense. It was a learning experience. And that's what VMI is. It's a learning experience. You're not going to do everything right the first time. Everyone's going to get the merits and everyone's going to fail it some way. Everyone's going to get a really bad test grade at some point in their cadetship. And it's about how you just come back from that. And it helps you learn where you messed up and how you can do better from that point.
Can you describe a situation where you have what might be the most memorable struggle or a failure, if you can even qualify mm-hmm. that way, that you've had here that you overcame, and what was that like?
I think, well, I had this really hard class last year, research design for political science, and I mean, I just thought I was not doing very well in the class, and I think eventually I realized, you know, how to deal with or how to like take the teacher's feedback and move on in a positive sense and really capitalize on that feedback. And I saw myself do better and was more comfortable with how the assignments were working towards the end. And, you know, I did really well on the final presentation and the presentation of the final paper. And, you know, I eventually got an A in that class. And I really was happy with how I worked. Like, that class was probably the hardest one I've had at VMI, but I was the most proud of.
Was that a pep talk that you gave yourself, or how did you turn that around?
I think it's just adapting to it. I don't think I really gave myself so much of a pep talk, so much as I just kind of realized how to just deal with it. There's no really flowery way to say it, you know. I was able to contextualize everything and it felt like, you know, I had a lot of things coming at me at one time, just, you know, with other class and everything. I was able to just kind of take it one step at a time.
Mm-hmm. And how do you organize yourself to keep a bullet list, or what do you do?
I should keep a bullet list. And I tell myself at the beginning of every semester that I'm going to, like, make a list of stuff I have to do every day. And then all of a sudden I just kind of, like, remember it in my head and, you know. but you know, it'd probably be more organized if I kept a list. And mm-hmm. it's probably some goal to set in the future, but I think it's genuinely just taking it one step at a time, one day at a time. I know, like, when you're a rat, they give you like advice before hell week, so, like, you know, just take it one meal at a time, just get to like the next meal. I think at VMI you kind of just have to take it week by week, day by day sometimes, and just take a deep breath and just let things come as they will. And I just have the serenity to accept the things that sometimes you can't change.
Did you have any situations or circumstances like here that at VMI where you're just like, I just need to get through the next class or the next mm-hmm. day?
Yeah, I think every kid experiences towards the end of the semester when you have all these papers due. Just the last week, I mean, we've all experienced this. You know, you have all these papers due, all these assignments due, and quite a few tests within the last week. And so, you really do have to just take it, you know, one paper at a time, one assignment at a time.
So next semester, you're going to be doing your survey for the CSAB, mm-hmm. Getting that feedback, doing a brief out. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the MECC
mm-hmm. yep.
competition that you're prepping for as well.
Yep.
And then you graduate.
Surprisingly, yeah. So it's been a long but a very short 4 years.
Everybody says that.
Yeah.
Looking back in the mirror. So, any regrets?
I can't think of any right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, I certainly do not regret coming to VMI. I always think about like how much I would regret it if I didn't come here. I think that's the thing about VMI is that it doesn't meet the expectations in the sense that, you know, you can't expect what's coming, you know. So it can't meet your expectations because you don't know what to expect. Mm-hmm. So even if you think you know what to expect, even if your family's alumni, which mine's not, but I know people who even their family was alumni, and they still don't really know what to expect, you know.
That's why we call this podcast the VMI Leader Journey, because mm-hmm. everybody's experience here is unique, as unique as they are as individuals.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Any advice that you would have for underclassmen or
I would say remember every day, like, why you love this place and why you decided to come here. Think about, you know, hanging out with your roommates in your room and hanging out with, you know, all your friends, and how you just, you simply would not have that at another college. So just remember why you love this place and every little thing about this place that might be dumb, but that you wouldn't have anywhere else, and that what truly makes you a better person. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's great advice. Well, thank you very much, Riley, for being part of this show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This has been a strategic outreach program of the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics. We educate, engage, and inspire the leadership journey of our VMI community and the nation. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast to follow along as we release new episodes. Follow the VMI Center for Leadership and Ethics on LinkedIn, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram to learn more about our programs and events, or visit our website at vmi.edu/CLE. Thanks for tuning in.